We're on the eve of historic testimony with potentially far-reaching consequences. This hour, analysis ahead of hearings before the Senate Judiciary Committee. It's a Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. President Trump accuses Democrats of a con game against Judge Kavanaugh. Political scientists Donna Hoffman of the University of Northern Iowa and Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College weigh in. Also, Trump attacks globalism and brushes off laughs at the UN. And according to a new Iowa poll, more than a third of Iowans say decision-making in the Trump White House is not normal or safe. Join our conversation for Politics Day. First, this news. Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. On board today, Donna Hoffman, professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa, in our Cedar Falls studio. Hi, Donna.
Good afternoon, Ben.
Good afternoon to you, and good afternoon to Wayne Moyer, Rosenfield professor of political science at Grinnell College, joining us from Grinnell by phone. Wayne,
good afternoon.
Hi. Wow. We've stepped into some breaking news here at the start of this Politics Wednesday. You heard it at the top of the hour on NPR's newscast, all the major news outlets reporting now a third accuser, including Fox News. Here's something from the New York Times, just so that we can it's a developing story, obviously, but to react to that, let me just read a little bit from the New York Times article. Judge Brett M. Kavanaugh was accused Wednesday by another woman of having engaged in sexual misconduct at parties while he was a student at Georgetown Preparatory School in the 1980s. The allegation came from Julie Swetnick, 55, who, like Judge Kavanaugh, grew up in the Washington suburbs. In a statement posted on Twitter by her lawyer, Ms. Swetnick said she observed the future Supreme Court nominee at parties where women were verbally abused, inappropriately touched, and gang raped. So, obviously, much more about that article, a developing story. This is vehemently denied by Judge Kavanaugh. Let's get initial reaction, even though we're waiting for details and seeing how this will be developing in our nation's capital and across the nation. Donna, your thoughts as you read these first reports.
Well, this would be the third person accusing Brett Kavanaugh of some kind of sexual misconduct. And one of the sticking points with Democrats in particular on the Judiciary Committee has been to slow the process down with each new allegation, and in particular to have the FBI do a further investigation. And then also another kind of side note there would be to have some of these other people, Michael Judge, the person that was named by Christine Blasey Ford in particular, mm-hmm. be in front of the committee and testify as well. But it would seem like at this point a course of action could in fact be that the FBI would step in, would pick up these allegations, figure out if they are, investigate whether they're credible or not, and the Judiciary Committee would put this on hold. But we know, in fact, that Senator Grassley is scheduled to vote for, I think, 9:30 Eastern time on Friday to come out of the committee. Mm-hmm. And that would just be, you know, the day after Blasey Ford is scheduled to testify before that committee. So, you know, we know in the testimony that senators are going to be given 5 minutes and only one round. And there are a lot of things senators can potentially do when they have time. This is obviously for questioning, but I would expect to see some pushback from the Democrats in terms of pushing really much harder now for an FBI investigation.
And I'm sure this would be raised in that context as well in my reading about the Anita Hill case. We remember 27 years ago in the confirmation hearings of Judge Clarence Thomas, the FBI didn't make an investigation after the claims were raised by Anita Hill. It took, I think, 2 days, Donna. Is that
three,
something?
3 days is my recollection.
Okay, 3 days.
On that, right. But a short period of time.
So that would be used by the Democrats to say, if you had started with this a week or 2 weeks ago, we would have been long since done with the investigation. Wayne Moyer, your reaction to this latest news?
Well, I'm trying to think ahead and kind of in support of what Donna was saying about the need for an FBI investigation. And put yourself in the Republicans' position. If they go ahead with a vote on Friday, and then they confirm Kavanaugh to the court, and then other information comes out afterwards, I can't see how that would help the party. I can see how it would help undermine the court.
Mm-hmm. What about even tomorrow's hearings? We'll watch the next few hours as this story develops. This is Michael Avenatti's client for Julie Swetnick, the third accuser, and this is a sworn declaration from Julie Swetnick that the Supreme Court nominee was involved in gang rapes. Involved there, the broadly speaking, not. I'm not even going to say anymore because I don't know what that word involved means in the early 1980s. That's according to the sworn affidavit. But I mean, could this put even tomorrow's hearings in questions in question if we put ourselves in the shoes of what is it, the 11 GOP members of the Judiciary Committee, Donna?
Well, my guess is that probably the hearing tomorrow will go forward. What happens after that, I think all bets would be off. You know, as I said, the vote was scheduled for Friday. And then mm-hmm. it is also clear that the McConnell in the Senate has asked senators to stay in town over the weekend because that helps in terms of the timing for the full Senate vote, which could take place as early as Monday or Tuesday, giving the timing. So they're really trying to push this through. And, you know, back to the point of the FBI investigation, you know, this is also a way for these allegations to be tested and, you know, for Kavanaugh's name to be cleared if these allegations are in fact, not credible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the FBI does. And the FBI does this very frequently.
But so we have heard, Donna, sorry to break in, but we have heard from Republicans that this is not what the FBI does. The Federal Bureau of Investigation. We have quotes,
but it is what they do, and they did it in the Anita Hill hearings, as you noted.
But I'm just saying that we have heard in the last
few days. And you know that's a point well taken. But you know, from Kavanaugh's perspective, I would think that an investigation to clear his name would be something he would be seeking.
All right. Donna Hoffman with us. If you just joined us, our hour of political discussion here on Wednesdays, Politics Wednesday, Donna Hoffman of the University of Northern Iowa, Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College. We invite you to join us. Historic week, either way it goes this week, tomorrow's hearings, also the new allegations. What is this controversy? River to River listeners, tell you about how times have or have not changed since the Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas controversy 27 years ago. What will you be watching for, listening for tomorrow in those hearings? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Let's go to some audio here. Reaction from the president yesterday. In conversation with the Washington Post and other news outlets, the president attacked Brett Kavanaugh's second accuser. This is Deborah Ramirez, the one featured in the New Yorker article that came out, I believe, last Friday. The president attacking the second accuser, Ramirez. Here's what he had to say.
He's a high-quality person. He's a great intellect. You're also not seeing him on his footing. This isn't his footing. He's never been here before. He's never had any charges like this. I mean, charges come up from 36 years ago that are totally unsubstantiated. I mean, you, as watching this, as the president of a great country, Colombia, you must say, how is this possible? 36 years ago, nobody ever knew about it, nobody ever heard about it, and now a new charge comes up. And she said, well, it might not be him, and there were gaps, and she said she was totally inebriated, and she was all messed up, and she doesn't know it was him, but it might have been him. Oh, gee, let's not make him a Supreme Court judge because of that. This is a con game being played by the Democrats also.
Okay, the president there, a con game with a mocking tone. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell accusing Democrats of inventing the accusations against Kavanaugh, saying it's a smear campaign to ruin his reputation.
But even by the far left standards, this shameful, shameful smear campaign has hit a new low. I'll get into the specifics in just a moment. But I want to be perfectly clear about what has taken place. Senate Democrats and their allies are trying to destroy a man's personal and professional life on the basis of decades-old allegations that are unsubstantiated and uncorroborated. Mr. President, is where we are. This is what the so-called resistance has become. A smear campaign, pure and simple, aided and abetted by members of the United States Senate.
Okay, let's hear one final voice before we go back to our guests and some callers. Democratic Minority Leader Senator Charles Schumer addressing the accusation that the women who have come forward to accuse Kavanaugh is a Democratic smear campaign.
So let me address these comments directly, that these allegations are part of, quote, a Democratic smear job. First, these allegations did not originate with Democrats. These women came forward with principle and courage, knowing they would face abuse and lasting personal pain for doing so. But realizing they had an obligation to the country, they did so anyway. Dr. Ford came forward and shared her story voluntarily on her own initiative. She wasn't put up by a Democrat, a Republican, or anybody else. It came from her heart. The idea that these allegations were cooked up or instigated or encouraged by Democrats in Congress is patently absurd and a real insult to the members of the Judiciary Committee and the members of this chamber. It is against the spirit, if not the letter, of our Senate rules. Addressing the second part of McConnell's claim, that's even worse. Democrats and Republicans are always throwing charges at each other. But the idea that this is a smear job? Whatever you think of the veracity of the allegations, it is shameful, shameful to doubt the women's sincerity.
Chuck Schumer there. And before we get to our callers, our phones are loaded. Wayne and Donna, maybe a comment on the tone change in the GOP in the last few days. At first, it didn't have the tone, and it did have the first few days. Now we have the credibility of the accusers being questioned. Senator Orrin Hatch suggesting Blasey was mistaken in her recollections, mixed up. Wayne, what do you make of the change in the last few days in the way the GOP has reacted to these now these accusations?
I think behind all of this is the Republicans have a terrible choice. On the one hand, they want to get a justice on the Supreme Court who they think will repeal Roe versus Wade. On the other hand, if they approve Kavanaugh, this will be a man under a cloud, and they probably won't get another chance to, at least before the election, get another justice approved for the Supreme Court. And then if the Democrats should win the Senate, I think that's unlikely, it would be impossible to get a very conservative Supreme Court justice.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go to our phones, have some of our listeners weigh in. Bill is with us in Des Moines. Lots of listeners. Bill, I'll ask you to be concise, but we're sure glad you're with us. Welcome.
Thank you. I think this is going to be the new norm for these judicial nominations, no matter who's in charge. Mm-hmm. I think that's just the way it's going to be. And, you know, we talk about political smear campaigns and everything like that. And, you know, I've heard this and, you know, I've thought it myself. If this is not politically motivated, why did the first accuser write a letter to a senator? And why did the second accuser go to the New Yorker? And I don't know where the third story came about. But, you know, are there any police reports for any of these events that happened? You know, I realize the psychology of these types of encounters and people repressing memories and everything like that. But is there a statute of limitations? I mean, is there going to be any end to this? Or is this our new norm moving forward for mm-hmm. the rest of our lives?
Got your point, Bill. Let me toss that to Donna.
Well, so the reason why Blasey Ford, her allegations came out is she wrote a letter to her representative. So somebody who represented her in California. And obviously that person is not in the confirmation process. That person who represents her happens to be a Democrat. It made its way to Dianne Feinstein, who is the ranking member of the Judiciary Committee, and she wanted to be she didn't want her name released as part of this. It leaked out, and this is how we this all came about. So there's and you know there is evidence from Blasey Ford, as near as we can tell, in terms of therapist notes that she had talked about this prior. Lack of a police report, as we know from lots of research that's done, many attempted rapes and rapes also go unreported, and they go unreported for many years. So this is, again, something that because there are all these questions, these are really good questions that the public has. Mm-hmm. These are things that should be set to rest by stopping with the process, doing an investigation, trying to figure out what the facts are here, and then letting the process go forward.
Okay. Let's go to Paul in Des Moines. Paul, thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks. I'll try and be as brief as I can. Certainly, the two parties have chosen to handle this situation differently. And I was wondering if you could speak to, in Iowa, do you have any idea how the way the two parties have handled this hearing will impact voter turnout? Thank you very much, and I'll take your answer on the air.
Okay. Thanks, Paul. So, back to voter turnout. Wayne, talk to that. Is this, you know, you mentioned the implications for the midterms. I guess you could spin it so that it could possibly motivate the base of either primary party, couldn't it?
I think that that's right. Certainly, the Republicans, particularly those who want to overturn Roe versus Wade, may be more encouraged to come out. And then on the Democratic side, the sort of abuse of women issue may be very critical. So it could increase turnout on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Donna, your comment?
Well, and one of the biggest motivators in terms of turnout is emotion, and negative emotion tends to activate more people than positive emotion here. But certainly, depending on what happens, you know, if Kavanaugh were to withdraw, for example, that could activate the Republican base. If he were to stay in and get confirmed, and that may negatively affect many Democrats in terms of their emotions, and they might be more inclined to go to the polls and to, you know, really knock on doors and that kind of thing. So it could cut both ways, because we don't exactly yet know how what the end of the story is going to be.
Right. And even before this third accusation, Lisa Murkowski, she's seen as a Republican swing vote. You know, a simple majority does it. Perhaps the vice president would have to break a tie if the Republicans lose one of their votes, like Lisa Murkowski. She cautioned, I think this is yesterday, this quote, "We are now in a place where it's not about whether or not Judge Kavanaugh is qualified. It is about whether or not a woman who has been a victim at some point in her life is to be believed." And if we look at that quote on its face, that doesn't bode well, Wayne, for the GOP. It doesn't show Lisa Murkowski as solidly in the voting for Kavanaugh camp, does it?
It doesn't. And then there's Susan Collins, who is close to Murkowski in terms of her hesitancy on this. And if Murkowski and Collins both go, then
that's
the
it.
Nomination wouldn't be approved.
Right. Let's go back to our phones in Des Moines. All of our callers so far from Des Moines. Tom is in Des Moines. Welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to point out that you have neglected to say that Donald Trump is the one who's holding up this investigation. All he has to do is to sign on and to order the FBI mm-hmm. to conduct this investigation, and we would have the most unbiased possible outcome of this that we can. You know, instead, what we're having is trial by the media, which most of us don't want.
Right.
But, you know, we've got reports of Kavanaugh's buddy, Mark Judge, authoring a book called Wasted, The Diary of a Gen X Drunk. And we need to know whether Kavanaugh is a part of this culture of drinking that allows for abuse and harassment of women. And it seems to suggest that he is, but without the investigation, we don't really know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Tom, yeah, and Donna, that's right. The president could say the word and say, we need an investigation, and it would happen?
Right, but what we see happening, and this is from a couple of stories I've seen recently, is the White House is pretty unhappy, and they want the Senate to move quicker. They think Grassley's going too slow. They're trying to push McConnell to go even faster. And this was from a few days ago, and then we kind of have seen this step up. And so, you know, obviously the White House wants to see Kavanaugh confirmed, and they want to see it done very quickly. At least that's what the evidence suggests at this point, looking at the various reporting that's out there.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to our phones. Greg in Waterloo. Greg, welcome to the program. We're coming up on a break, but glad to have you on. What's on your mind?
My comment is a pun. Mm. And the Republicans voted to make the vote for Supreme Court Justice majority vote and took away the ability of the Democrats to filibuster. Well, I am hoping for a filibuster.
Oh, I think we get that. Thanks, Greg from Waterloo. But actually, Wayne, doesn't this predate the Democrats took the first step in not requiring a supermajority to have what judges approved to our federal and district courts, our courts of appeal, right?
That's correct. The Democrats removed the filibuster for appeals courts and district courts, and then the Republicans extended it to the Supreme Court.
So it was the so-called nuclear option at the lower level, district and appeals courts, and the nuclear option then that next step taken by the Republicans at the Supreme Court level.
That's correct.
Okay, we've got that right. Let's talk in the couple minutes that we have here. Donna, compare this case with what took place with Anita Hill 27 years ago during the confirmation hearings of Judge Clarence Thomas. How many similarities do you see?
Well, there are, I think, a lot of similarities in that, although there are some dissimilarities, too, that are interesting to point out. So Hill, in particular, was talking about workplace sexual harassment. And by bringing up that issue, that was something that, you know, people didn't really talk about around kitchen tables at that point. Mm-hmm. But we did start talking about it at that point. And there are several women who ran then in the 1992 elections who suggested that at least part of their calculus to run for public office was this shining the light on how Anita Hill was treated, the sexual harassment in the workplace allegations, et cetera. And 1992 became at that point what we called the, quote, year of the woman, where a lot of women, well, that's relatively speaking, a lot of women were elected to Congress, in particular in the Senate in that year, because the Senate was composed of, I think it was 14 men at that point. And now we see different kinds of allegations. This is sexual violence, not in the workplace. And we still, though, see Republicans having to confront the fact that in the Judiciary Committee, there's never been a woman Republican serve on the Judiciary Committee. And so that questioning tomorrow is going to at least theoretically be done by the male Republican senators. But they, as we know now, they are actually having a female prosecuting attorney from Arizona, I believe it is, right, to come in and handle that, in part because of the optics, because they learned about the optics from the 1991 hearings where there were men doing this questioning, not to very good effect.
Right. We've got to take a break. Also, we'll have Charles Grassley, a comment of his I'll read after we take a break about why a Arizona prosecutor specializing in sex crimes, Rachel Mitchell is her name, will be the one doing the questioning tomorrow in the historic testimony. Grassley, just as a hint, doesn't mention that it's for optics. He has a different explanation. You can come back and hear that if you stick around after our break. Donna Hoffman with us, professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa. Wayne Moyer, Rosenfield professor of political science at Grinnell College. Join our conversation. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, Politics Wednesday. Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College, Donna Hoffman of the University of Northern Iowa. Politics are popping with the breaking news. If you haven't heard, there's a new Kavanaugh accuser. Her name, Julie Swetnick, detailing parties where girls were allegedly drugged and raped. The lawyer, Michael Avenatti, today identifying Julie Swetnick in an affidavit posted online by Avenatti. Swetnick claims that Kavanaugh, as a high school student in the early 1980s with others, spiked the drinks of girls with house parties at house parties with grain, alcohol, and or drugs to, quote, cause girls to lose inhibitions and their ability to say no. Swetnick said these efforts by Kavanaugh and his buddy Mark Judge were done so the girls could, quote, could then be gang raped in a side room or bedroom by a train of numerous boys. She said, I became a victim of one such rape where Mark Judge and Brett Kavanaugh were present. Reading off of the CNBC website right now, it's breaking in all the major news markets, obviously details that are highly disturbing to some of our listeners, the news right now. Let's listen to the interview that Brett Kavanaugh, part of it, gave to Fox News, sitting next to his wife, defending himself, saying he has never sexually assaulted a woman.
The truth is, I've never sexually assaulted anyone in high school or otherwise. I am not questioning and have not questioned that perhaps Dr. Ford at some point in her life was sexually assaulted by someone in some place. But what I know is I've never sexually assaulted anyone.
Okay, Republican Senator Orrin Hatch, another voice of the GOP on this matter, accusing Christine Blasey Ford of being mixed up.
And he wasn't at the party. So, you know, there's clearly somebody's mixed up.
Do you believe the accusers at all?
Well, I think she's mistaken. I think she's mistaken something. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know her.
Okay. Tomorrow morning, the Senate Judiciary Committee will be hearing testimony from Kavanaugh and Blasey Ford. We'll be broadcasting that live here on Iowa Public Radio. NPR's coverage of the hearings beginning at 9 tomorrow, which will preempt our regular programming throughout the day for as long as those hearings last. We'd like you to join our conversation. What will you be listening for? What will you be watching for? 1-866-780-9100. Let's pick up where we left off there a couple of minutes ago. This morning, the Senate Judiciary Committee announcing that Rachel Mitchell, this is an Arizona prosecutor specializing in sex crimes, will question Judge Kavanaugh's first accuser, Christine Blasey Ford. Now, Blasey had wanted the senators to question her. Here's how Charles Grassley, the committee chair, explained that decision from an email that was sent out by his office earlier today. In the senator's words, according to this release, I'm committed to providing a forum to both Dr. Ford and Judge Kavanaugh on Thursday that is safe, comfortable, and dignified. The majority members have followed the bipartisan recommendation to hire as staff counsel for the committee an experienced career sex crimes prosecutor to question the witness at Thursday's hearing. The goal is to depoliticize the process and get to the truth instead of grandstanding and giving senators an opportunity to launch their presidential campaigns. So Wayne, the GOP says, according to Grassley, this is a move to depoliticize the proceedings. The Democrats say they just don't want to repeat the optics of only white men grilling a woman about sexual harassment allegations. Which is it, Wayne?
It seems to me it'll be almost impossible to depoliticize it. And then you have a prosecutor coming in. Will she act as a prosecutor with regard to Kavanaugh, who is the person accused, or will she act as a prosecutor to the person who's making the charges? And so it's. I'm not sure that she can be an impartial interviewer at this stage.
Mm-hmm. Donna, so it really comes down to also how she interviews Brett Kavanaugh, the type of questions she asks him?
Well, certainly. Apparently, she's going to be questioning both Kavanaugh and Blasey Ford. And, you know, her experience is in the prosecution here. And so people will certainly be watching to see if there's any kind of difference in terms of the way that she questions the two individuals.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go back to our phones. 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Bill, calling from Urbandale. Hi, Bill. What's your point?
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm fine. We're in the thick of it, aren't we?
Yes. I guess I read the story this morning, I guess, that Avenatti had, you know, put forth about the client that he's maintaining that was attended you know, these parties that where grain alcohol and drugs were used to evidently gang rape women and, you know, girls and whatnot, because when this occurred, they would have been girls at that point. But I would question, and she, you know, and I take offense at anyone that would rape. But my question would go to, if this was going on and she saw this, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing, why did she continue to go to those parties?
I can't answer that question. I don't know if any of our analysts can. Yeah. I guess we don't know. I'm not sure about your facts either. So we're going to leave it there, Bill, and move on to another caller. Let's go to Chris in Des Moines. Chris is with us. Hi. Chris, you're on the air. Are you there? Okay. Chris, not there. You've been waiting for some time, too. Let me ask about this. You touched on it earlier. If Brett Kavanaugh does not get confirmed, Donna, do Republicans have time to select another and get that person through the confirmation process?
It depends on what the deadline is. So, you know, one of the time periods here is October 1st. That's when the Supreme Court begins to sit for their new term. Another, you know, deadline, if you will, these are somewhat artificial, is the election. And the Senate is certainly the possibility is there that the Senate could change partisan hands as a result of that election. But there would still be a lame duck Senate sitting until the 3rd of January in 2019, even if that were to change hands. And so, you know, I think the typical time, I'm going to be off a little bit on this in terms of confirmation in kind of this new era that we're in, mm-hmm. Is roughly 60, 70, 80 days, something like that. So, but given the dynamics of what's happening now, I would think that we would expect more delays in this sense. And so, you know, this is one of the reasons why the White House, in particular, Republicans in the Senate are really wanting to push this, is because they do see their optimal time as occurring right now to get someone confirmed for a number of different reasons.
Right. A window seems to be closing. And then let's just put one out there. Let's say the Democrats get the House and the Senate, key in this question, of course. Then come January, the president puts forth a nominee for the still vacant seat. The Democrats could then claim payback and what, Wayne, keep a seat open for two more years until the presidential election?
Well, they could do that. They could also conduct hearings and have a vote. And if the Democrats have a majority, they could vote the person down.
Mm-hmm. So this is really interesting, Wayne, that this, the stakes this week, in the next few days, if Kavanaugh is forced to bow out, we could suddenly control, have a decision that affects two branches of government, couldn't we? I mean, Donna, we have not only the judicial branch, but also the executive branch because of the Russia investigation, right?
Well, you know, certainly this is this news doesn't happen in a vacuum. And so we have so much coming at us in terms of news stories coming out of Washington, and that's just out of Washington.
Right.
There are a lot of other things certainly that can impact this. And so no politician coming into a midterm election wants to be in this kind of environment where it's very unsettled on multiple fronts, multiple branches, and lots of news stories, you know, happening that call into question things happening in the executive branch, things happening in the Senate, things happening in even the judiciary, as you mentioned.
Right. And we have a new Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa poll this week showing that more than three-fourths of Iowans say they are concerned about the way the decisions are being made in the White House, and a plurality, more than a third, say they are convinced that what is happening is, in the words of the polling, not normal or safe. This is about how decisions are being made in the White House. 17% of Iowans say they're convinced everything is normal. 24% say they have some concerns. 16% say they have a lot of concerns. So Wayne, to the point of the midterm elections, when these types of stories are dominating the news, this prevents all of our congressional candidates to the Republicans, at least, to talk about the stories they would like to.
No, I think it places a big burden on them. I think, and maybe even with this story, I mean, you had the Bob Woodward book and the anonymous op-ed piece in the New York Times indicating that the White House is in disarray. And at some level, people ask the question, well, was the Kavanaugh appointment itself thoroughly thought through before it was made mm-hmm. in the White House?
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on to some other things. As mentioned, so much worthy news, worthy of analysis, covered up because we just have these huge stories, huge developments rolling out. Let's talk about this, though. President Trump defending his America First agenda in a speech yesterday at the United Nations General Assembly. The president boasting that he's accomplished more in his time in office than almost any previous administration, a claim that drew immediate laughter from the diplomats, the full hall, and other world leaders. Let's take a listen to that.
In less than 2 years, my administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country. America's so true. Didn't expect that reaction, but that's okay.
Okay. Donna, react to that. There's plenty more of the speech, of course, but some saying it sounded a lot like a campaign speech rather than one you'd give before world leaders.
Sure. Well, the tone was different. He did moderate his tone in that speech and was using a teleprompter. That's a standard line in his stump speech, and it's usually said with a lot more fire. So his reaction, you know, makes me wonder if anybody within his inner circle ever pushes back on claims that he makes in campaign speeches or in other forums, because he seemed genuinely kind of surprised by that reaction in that forum that that he was addressing. Mm-hmm. And this is something that is very dangerous for presidents to only have people who will, yes people, we might call them, around them, being in a bubble, not having people push back on assumptions and false information and other things that presidents may believe or may want to tout. And that is something all presidents need is someone around them who will say who will be a naysayer in some sense to make presidents think carefully about what it is that they're saying and what the reaction is. His reaction to, you know, the reaction of the UN General Assembly tells me that he doesn't have somebody doing that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so, Wayne, did you see it that way, that the president half expected or to whatever degree expected that this audience was going to be similar to one of the campaign rallies that he runs?
That rings true to me, and clearly he was surprised by the reaction.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Also, repeating a lot of lines from his standard campaign speeches, as you mentioned there, Donna, but also falsehoods. We have passed the biggest tax cuts and reforms in American history, he said. Often repeated, not true. His tax cuts rank eighth when measured as a percentage of the size of the economy. Another one, we've started construction of a major border wall. No money has been put forth for this. Another false claim that is repeated. Foreign aid. The United States is the world's largest giver in the world, by far, of foreign aid, said the president. Well, if you look at dollars given as a percentage of the size of the country's economy, the U.S. actually ranks near the bottom of industrialized countries. Wayne, what else did you take away in the international arena from that speech yesterday by the president?
Well, I think one of the most interesting parts, and for me troubling part, is we reject the ideology of globalization, and we embrace the doctrine of patriotism. And time and time again, he emphasizes national sovereignty. And so it implies unilateral action in all sorts of issues. But this creates problems for us sometimes. It avoids dealing with the question that sometimes we have collective interests in other countries. And I use Iran as a very specific example here. Trump came down very, very hard on Iran, But he came down. But how effective will U.S. sanctions be when the Europeans, China, and Russia are still cooperating with Iran? Wouldn't it make more sense for the U.S. to be working with the Europeans, the Russians, and the Chinese rather than there are problems with Iran, but is the best strategy for the U.S. to be doing it alone? That's one of the things that came out for me.
Mm-hmm. Another big story in any normal news week would be the story of the week. Monday morning, the political world braced for the news that the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, had been fired, or that maybe he had quit. It turned out that neither of those happened, at least for now. He remains the center of this debate, though. We remember the Deputy Attorney General is really, Donna, in this Russia investigation, the head of it, because Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, recused himself, right?
Correct. So Mueller reports to him in terms of that. And you know, he's been under, Rosenstein, I should add, has been under fire for quite some time. There's a movement in the House by the Freedom Caucus, I believe, to even try to impeach him. And so he's taken a lot of fire. This, you know, news story and how that played out is, it could take up a whole show, I think, in itself. But, you know, it does matter, we think, as to whether he resigns or is fired in terms of who his replacement would be. So if he resigns, Trump could appoint anybody who has already gone through Senate confirmation there. If he was fired, then that may not, in fact, be the case. And there's some gray areas there because some of this has not been tested, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And so it seems now that Rosenstein is probably secure until after the midterms. And, you know, Sessions has also been on the hot seat with Trump as well. And it's also speculating, a lot of people have speculated that Sessions will probably leave after the midterms as well. So you may see both number one and number two at the Justice Department then exiting shortly after the midterms.
Mm-hmm. Wayne Moore, a comment on this, because Rosenstein is a concern if he leaves, if he is fired, especially, Wayne, then we have another, puzzle piece possibly in obstruction of justice charges, right?
That's right. And the question will be immediately raised, well, what happens to the Mueller investigation? And then the question will be, who comes in to replace Rosenstein? And will then there be, I mean, I think the suspicions will be that whoever Trump would appoint to take Rosenstein's place, and he probably couldn't get a permanent appointment because it would have to go through the Senate, but whoever comes in, I mean, the suspicions would be that Trump would be putting pressure on them, to, even more pressure than he's already put on, to close the investigation down, which then I think could well create a constitutional crisis.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Let's look forward here in the final two or three minutes we have here. Donna, let's go back to the main event. It's very serious. Sorry to put it in sort of game terms. The hearings tomorrow many of us will be watching and listening to, and we'll have live here on Iowa Public Radio NPR's coverage of those hearings of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Judiciary Chairman Grassley heading that. What will you be looking for, especially Donna Hoffman, tomorrow? What questions will be in your mind? What will you be looking for from Blasey Ford, from Kavanaugh?
I'll be looking at how each of them are treated by the various senators, as well as the prosecutor that they're going to bring in. Whether each of them are seemingly credible in terms of the things that they are saying, and will there be anything there that gives senators on the Judiciary, you know, committee pause? I mean, the clip that you played earlier from Senator Hatch, you know, already says she's mixed up. He hasn't even heard from her. So some prejudging has been evident on the part of certain people in the United States Senate. And it's really important that she be heard. It's also important that Kavanaugh be allowed to defend himself against these allegations as well. And so I think it's, you know, it's going to be, I would say, probably fascinating for political junkies to watch in terms of the dynamics.
Mm-hmm. Wayne, your final thoughts looking to tomorrow?
I would agree on all of those things, but I'd be especially interested in is Kavanaugh's high school days. There's a bunch of other evidence that's come out independent of the accused sexual accusations, that he drank an awful lot and went to a lot of big parties, et cetera. And the image that had been created ahead of time is that he was squeaky clean in that era. And so that raises a credibility issue here, and I'd be interested to see how he handles it.
Right. I saw one headline asking, choir boy or frat boy, in that. And I don't know, Donna, from your reading there, can we – I mean, the culture in this Ivy League prep school – it's fairly established at that time, isn't it?
I think so. And but you know, we should not think that any future appointee has to be an angel in that sense. I think one of the bigger issues here is Kavanaugh lying? Is his credibility in jeopardy, given now that he has, in the Fox interview, portrayed himself as being studious, not a big partier? But yet some of the evidence suggests otherwise. And there's the issue of credibility here that's certainly connected to these larger and more serious allegations. But what kind of person do we want to have on the United States Supreme Court is going to be what the Senate has to decide.
Okay. Thank you. Donna Hoffman, professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa. Wayne Moyer, Rosenfield professor of political science at Grinnell College. So glad to have your analysis, Wayne and Donna. Until we have you on again, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure, Ben.
And live coverage tomorrow, the hearings beginning at 9 a.m. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.